Java, an Indonesian island, a type of coffee, the quiet revolution in modern IT. Sun's ubiquitous Write Once, Run Anywhere language has become the main alternative to Microsoft's .NET programming model. Hello, I'm Cliff Saran. Welcome to ComputerWeekly.com podcasts, where you can download and listen to interviews with leading experts on key topics of IT management and technology. While .NET has enabled software developers to create applications for the various Windows platforms, Sun's Java really does seem to run anywhere and everywhere. In today's program, I am speaking with James Gosling, the father of Java. For my first question, James, I would like to ask what has been the biggest surprise for you in the last 12 years or so since Java 1 was released?
I mean, it's almost impossible to answer which is the biggest surprise. I guess I would have to say it's just the sheer volume of things that, you know, people have been doing, the places that Java's been going, you know, the fact that there are several billion devices out there with Java on it, I find pretty staggering.
Has there been any devices, any applications you've seen that have really struck you as amazing?
Again, it's really hard to pick one because there are a huge number of really amazing things that people have done with Java. I mean, it's everything from, you know, the folks that build control systems for giant telescopes to, you know, probably my favorite large-scale enterprise application is the Brazilian national healthcare system, you know, where they record every patient-caregiver interaction, and, you know, they've done some really lovely stuff. To, you know, giant websites like Orbitz and eBay. They're just phenomenal.
And Java's also been in space. It's the Martian rover, I believe.
Not on the rover itself. You know, there's intent to do it on a later rover, but NASA budgets got slashed pretty heavily, so that never happened. But a lot of the ground station software for the rovers that are up there now is big bags of Java code.
One of Java's founding principles was write once, run anywhere, allowing people to develop software once and run it on any device. There does appear to be many devices where Java is running. How true is it to its roots?
I mean, write once, run anywhere within specific domains has actually worked really, really well. On the desktop, people pretty routinely, you know, write software, you know, run it on Mac OS X, run it on Windows, run it on Linux, run it on different flavors of Linux, and it works just fine. Where life gets a little difficult, and we sort of many years ago sort of partitioned the universe into sort of several anywheres. Right? So we sort of had the desktop world, the embedded cell phone world, and then at the very small end, you know, there's a smart card world. And many of these are so different that, you know, it would make no sense to be able to take, you know, some enterprise level transaction clearance system and run it on a cell phone. Within the cell phone world, you know, the intent has always been to try to make the interoperability as much as possible work. We've had some issues, and you know, that have gotten rather ugly in various cases, where the different cell phone platforms show the strains of evolution. I mean, the basic APIs that were set, you know, 5, 6, 7 years ago, they were designed around very small cell phones. And then people have done extensions to them, you know, to the point where we now have this rather odd patchwork of extensions, you know, that depends on, you know, which industry did what at what time. And, you know, that is a problem that we're working on really hard. You know, we're trying to get as many people as possible to put the CDC VMs in their cell phones instead of what's called the CLDC, the connected limited device ones. I mean, one of the big sea changes that's been going on is that the phones are getting powerful enough that you really can support a software environment that's very close in richness to what you find on a desktop. And 5 and 6 years ago, you couldn't conceivably do that. So we're trying to transition as much as possible on the cell phones to a very sort of desktop-like environment from an API point of view.
There are many programming interfaces, libraries, frameworks. Aren't these simply barriers to interoperability?
No, they're actually opportunities for interoperability. There are, for example, there's like the Java OpenGL binding. So it's a standard API for doing OpenGL style 3D. And that is, available on all the desktop operating systems. So these standard APIs make interoperability possible.
There was a big battle with Microsoft in the early 90s, and then Sun and Microsoft agreed to work together on interoperability. How has this benefited Java?
Well, the track that things were going on with Microsoft was that they had done a version of Java and an integration of Java into their tools that forced all developers' applications to run only on Microsoft. And that was in violation of the contract that they signed. And we sued them, they lost. And as a consequence of that, we now do all the support for Windows. And so now we have essentially perfect interoperability between all the Unix variants, Windows, and OS X. So that you can write a piece of software that runs on Windows. You can then sell it on Linux. You can sell it on OS X. Or more often what people do is they develop on Linux because Linux is just a nicer place to be. And then they sell it on the other platforms.
Is interoperability really necessary, given that we now have the ability to engineer applications using web services so that one application can make use of functionality in external code?
Well, when you've got a network, that kind of works. It doesn't work when you need high performance, because all the web services stuff is, by definition, fairly slow. It's essentially inevitable that networks will always be slower than, say, a direct method call. Probably by as much as like six orders of magnitude. It's a really big difference, and you can tune things all you want. The difference will always be there. There's also issues around reliability and compatibility and management, and the fact that network links are sometimes there and sometimes not. There are a set of fallacies around network computing That most people don't get right away. And you really have to think of network computing as being very, very different from, say, a regular method call. It also means you end up having to rewrite the networking protocols on both ends. So say you've got an implementation of web services that runs on Windows, then you would need to do another implementation that runs on Linux. If you only did interoperability through the network, then you end up with all kinds of protocol compatibility problems, which gets really ugly. Besides which, there are all kinds of standard libraries besides networking that it's really nice to have available everywhere. Standard APIs for databases and rendering maps and all kinds of things. It's light and very nice to be able to run here, to run there, to run wherever you need it, as opposed to having to always communicate through to things through the network, through a very thin straw.
This is from the company that once said the network is the computer.
The network is the computer, but you have to treat the network differently than a normal local method call. Right? It's really important to have the network there and to understand its strengths and its weaknesses.
Along with web services, my other question is about the influence of open source software. Why do we need Java and its write once, run anywhere philosophy when open source applications can be compiled on any platform?
Well, there's a lot more to it than just write once, run anywhere, for one thing. There's all the really nice properties about security and developer productivity and reliability when you compare Java to languages like C and C++. But still, with write once, run anywhere, there's this sort of myth in the Linux world that anybody can just take the code and recompile it. And most people don't want to recompile. They just want the code. They just want to run it. Give me the program. Let me run it. One of the other big myths is most people live in this sort of Intel architecture world. And people think, well, you know, it's all the, you know, the x86 instruction set. The different machines are really different. You know, the way that you tune for each of the different Intel chipsets, each of the different flavors of the Intel architecture, whether it's, you know, it's a chip from Intel or a chip from AMD, they're really different. You know, and if you look at the what say the high-end game developers do, they, you know, for the Intel platform, they will compile, you know, a dozen versions of their game to optimize for different platforms, different versions of the Intel platform. And in the Java world, in the sort of dynamic compilation world, your application gets tuned for the actual piece of silicon sitting underneath it right now. You know, so for instance, in you know, the current sort of big iron competitions, you know, the Intel chips are winning in clock rate, and they're winning a lot of the benchmarks today. But it turns out that all the AMD Opteron stuff, you know, that those chips have a much better memory architecture. So if you're doing memory bandwidth intensive operations, AMD is still the winner. And the way that you optimize code for Intel versus Opteron is quite different. You know, on the Intel chips, you need to thoroughly avoid touching memory if you can. And so the write once, run anywhere is a much deeper thing than just Intel versus PowerPC. It's about the sort of fine-grained distinctions between them. And what happens in the Linux world is people just compile once for a sort of generic CPU. And that ends up doing optimization that's not actually very good.
When Java first came out, it enabled websites to offer interactivity, a user interface, and animation. Macromedia Flash and Ajax are extremely popular ways of jazzing up websites. Where does Java fit?
Well, you can actually do all of that with Java today, and you can do it actually very well. I mean, in the early days of Java, we had huge problems with that, because of the interoperability problems with the Windows Java VM. And it was exactly that kind of sort of hijacking of the interoperability that caused us to get into that court case. And so we're in a position now where you can actually do all of the interesting interactivity, and actually in a much deeper way than you can with Flash. You can build much more sophisticated plugins using Java applets than you can with Flash. The issue that we have really is around tools. The Macromedia folks have made it, you know, very easy for unsophisticated developers to build very straightforward things. You know, and in the Java world, you can build much, much more sophisticated stuff, but the development process is really geared towards developers.
So where is Java heading? What is its role in Web 2.0, the next version of the web?
Well, Java is, you know, a particularly excellent engine for building, you know, the back ends of a lot of these interactive experiences. You know, people use it a lot in, you know, the sort of underlying, you know, computational bits. People can easily build, you know, very nice interactive components. You know, a lot of the systems that require sort of these large sort of data structures that are sort of the collaboration components of Web 2.0 works really well in the Java world, especially when, you know, your sites start to get large. You know, with the smaller Web 2.0 sites, they can be reasonably sloppy about using large numbers of processors, but, you know, you quickly discover that your power bill is insane. You know, so folks generally find that you can get away with you know, a lot less. Java's performance is hugely better than most of the other technologies, and also in the front end, people can build all kinds of interactive applications. Java is actually really popular for building desktop applications, but that's primarily for enterprise software. You don't see as much of it on the sort of public internet as you see it on corporate intranets.
So James, where would you like to see Java in 5 years' time?
Well, I would certainly like to see you know, Java a lot more smoothly integrated into cell phone handsets. You know, a lot less sort of differences between the software environments in them. There's a lot going on with cable television and the Blu-ray discs. I would like to see us get to a place where all of those environments are more interoperable, more uniform, so that people can build content that smoothly targets the web, cable TV, cell phones, so that exploiting the synergies between all of these different ways of getting at the web is very smooth and very straightforward. We really have to get serious about tackling the sort of non-expert software developer, the people who don't really think of themselves as software developers, but as sort of artists, the sort of content provider crowd.
Thank you, James, and thank you for listening. Please join us again on www.computerweekly.com/podcasts.